Welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Jen Gulbeck, sitting in for Kojo. Over the summer, some area schools revised their policies around recognizing the identities of transgender and gender non-binary students. Students in Alexandria, Arlington, Montgomery County, and DC schools will have the option to mark gender non-binary on official school forms. In Arlington, they'll have the right, now written into system-wide policy, to use bathrooms and locker rooms that correspond to their gender identities, and teachers and staff will be required to refer to students using their preferred names and pronouns. That's also the case in Montgomery County. As the new school year kicks off, what might these changes mean for student academic and social experiences in school? Joining us to discuss is Debbie Truong. She reports on education in Virginia for the Washington Post. Debbie, it's good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Debbie, before we jump into the conversation, I want to make sure we're all on the same page in terms of definitions. Listeners may hear words like transgender or cisgender or gender non-binary and gender identity. Can you start by defining those for us?
Yeah, sure. So one helpful resource that I've found in trying to learn about LGBTQ issues and the terminology used to navigate those issues is the GLAAD organization. GLAAD shares stories about LGBTQ people and advocates for more acceptance. GLAAD puts out a media guide, every couple of years. And as part of that guide, they have a very helpful glossary of terms. And so I'm pulling these definitions straight from that term, from that media guide. So gender identity, to start off, is a person's internal sense and understanding about their gender. It's not something that's visible or is the same as what they're expressing, but who they feel inside themselves to be. Transgender is sort of an umbrella term for people whose gender identity or the way they express their gender may be different from the sex that they were assigned at birth. And a cisgender person is someone who is not transgender. A non-binary person is someone whose gender identity is neither strictly male or female, so their gender identity may fall somewhere between male or female, or even outside both those binaries.
So 2 weeks ago, a federal judge ruled in a major lawsuit by a former Gloucester County High School student, Gavin Grimm, who is transgender. He said that the school district violated his constitutional rights in preventing him from using the bathrooms that correspond to his gender identity. The case made it all the way to the Supreme Court, but the ruling is from a lower court. So what's the latest on that?
Yeah, so to give you some background, Gavin Grimm sued the Gloucester County School Board in 2015 over a school board policy that effectively barred transgender students from using the restrooms that align with their gender identity. The case has been making its way through the courts ever since, and 2 years ago, the Supreme Court of the United States was scheduled to hear oral arguments in the case. That was until the Trump administration rescinded Obama-era guidance that said that students should be allowed to use the facilities that correspond with their gender identity. So given that, the case was sent back down to the lower courts. And what you saw earlier this month was that a lower court judge found that Grimm's constitutional rights had been violated. I spoke with Gavin after the case, and he was happy, but he was also cautious. The Gloucester County School Board has, at every step of the case, indicated that they plan to put a lot of legal force behind upholding the policy. And so Gavin and his lawyers seem pretty certain that the school board will appeal the decision. I have not been able to confirm that with the school board itself.
And so what's the Gloucester County School Board's legal argument against allowing Gavin Grimm to use the bathroom that corresponds to his gender identity?
Well, the school board has pointed to arguments from the community and other community members who feel that other students' privacy is violated by having a transgender student in the restrooms that correspond with their gender identity.
So Gloucester County is a bit of a trek from here, mm-hmm. but the case has implications for local school systems. Why have some of them been watching the outcome of this case so closely?
Sure. So Fairfax County Public Schools, which is, of course, in Northern Virginia and is the largest school system in the state, a couple of years ago was considering a policy that would have explicitly allowed students to use the restrooms that correspond with their gender identity, as well as put in writing that students must be called by their preferred pronouns. The school system held off on held off on moving forward with those policies pending the resolution of Grimm's case and others throughout the country. And so I think, you know, even though Gloucester is quite a bit away from here, a lot of school systems, especially in this region, are looking to that case as sort of guidance on how to move forward.
There's one area school system that isn't waiting to craft its own policy about gender identity in bathrooms and locker rooms. What's the new policy that Arlington Public Schools put in place over the summer?
Sure. So Arlington Public Schools, like several other school systems in Northern Virginia, have prohibited discrimination based on gender identity or sexual orientation for quite some time. What most school systems have not done is put in writing what exactly that means. And so the Arlington policy that went into effect this summer explicitly says that students should be able to use the facilities that correspond with their gender identity and, among other things, like they should be called their preferred pronouns and, classroom rosters should be updated with a student's preferred name.
Now joining the conversation, I'd like to bring in Maria Navarro. She's the Chief Academic Officer for Montgomery County Public Schools. Maria, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Quincy Dubois, a rising senior in Arlington Public Schools. Quincy, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
And Robert Rigby Jr. is a teacher and the president of Fairfax County Public Schools Pride. Robert, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
So Quincy, you are a transgender student who attends school in Arlington, and you testified at the school board meeting in support of the new policy. Why was it important to you that you speak up, and what did you want to say?
I thought it was really important for me to stand up as an out and proud transgender student for the students and peers I have around me that might not be able to be as out and proud, whether that be because of their situations at home with their families or any number of other factors that just don't enable them to be as loud and to be activists the way that I'm able to be. And I think that it was really important for me to speak at the school board meeting because I wanted to make it clear that, within our communities, transgender people aren't outsiders. We have grown up here. We live here. You know, I love Arlington. I love the DMV area. This is where I spent my entire life. And, this place has shaped me into who I am. And I don't want people to think that transgender people are, you know, outsiders or are, you know, influencing our communities from, you know, big urban centers or something like that. I think, we're people, we're your children, we're your students, we're the people you see on the street. And I think that getting us respect and our civil rights is a really important thing to me. And I think it's a step that I'll never stop trying to chase.
You back to school for your senior year in 2 weeks. What do you think the implications will be for the new policy just in everyday experiences of transgender and gender non-binary students in Arlington schools?
I think there will be many implications, and I think it is going to be mostly fantastic. I'm very proud of the county and everyone who's been advocating for this new policy implementation plan. So we've had our non-discrimination policy for a while, but it's been a little bit toothless, if I might say that. It's had kind of a bland non-discrimination policy, but it hasn't been something with specific rules or regulations that tell people how to treat transgender students. And so it's always been up to staff and teachers whether or not they would like to respect their transgender students, whether that be with their pronouns or their name. And a lot of that can cause a lot of stress for students. And I think that implementing this new policy that will allow students to feel much more safe in their schools and communities will make it so that there's a lot less stress regarding going to school and being in that social community for transgender students.
In the past, have you had trouble with getting your school to allow you to use the bathroom or the pronouns that you'd prefer?
I actually have. Yeah, it has been, for the most part, really well done. I think people have handled it very well. But it has been a bit of a struggle. I came out when I was in my freshman year. And throughout my freshman year, until the end of it, I was living pretty much as out as transgender, but still treated as female. So I'm female to male transgender. And throughout my sophomore year, I was having to come out to everybody anew every time I introduced myself. So I had to, have a really complicated conversation with school administration when I wanted to use the bathrooms and facilities that align with my male gender. And I think that while there's a lot of good intentions there, it was really almost impossible to make me and other transgender students feel comfortable and safe without a policy like the one that we're implementing now.
So, Robert, some area school systems, including Fairfax, haven't gotten quite as specific as Arlington has in requiring students to be referred to by their preferred pronouns, allowing them to use the bathroom that corresponds to their gender identity. Does being specific matter?
It does. Fairfax has a reputation for being welcoming for binary and non-binary students. We have the non-discrimination global policy that Quinn says Arlington used to have, but we don't have a lot of details. Our administrators know a lot. Our clinical staff know some. Our teachers don't get details until someone comes and says, you have a trans kid, you should act this way. And that works great for that 10% of trans kids that have a parent knocking down the schoolhouse door. But most parents, for any reason, don't knock down the schoolhouse door. So the rest of the trans kids don't have staff with as much knowledge and understanding.
So even without those same specifics that some of these other school districts have, would you still consider Fairfax to be a welcoming and inclusive place for trans and non-binary students?
Fairfax is a pretty welcoming place. You know, our intentions are good. We have a lot of work to do. But by and large, it is welcoming. And what I hear from parents who advocate for their kids is that people are wonderful. What I hear from kids who don't have parents advocating for is that they feel left out on the porch.
Debbie, in the last year, Fairfax Schools did decide to strike any reference to biological gender from their policies and instead use the term gender identity. Why is that significant?
That's significant because I think it goes, you know, quite a long way in sort of reframing the way that we see gender and gender identity in schools. It may seem like a relatively small change, but what I heard from a lot of LGBTQ students and their advocates is that it just goes a step further in sort of recognizing and validating these students.
Maria, Montgomery County Public Schools also edited some of its guidelines around student gender identity and expression over the summer. What things changed and why?
Well, so we wanted, this is continuous work for us. Our school board sets the tone by looking at the policy and setting policy that sends a message to us as a community around how we are going to support the education of all of our students. And we are listening to our community, and in that, we have to revise policies, regulations. We also revised our guidelines for student gender identity. And that's an important document because those are important documents that are used in schools every day. Policy is important. It sets a tone for a school district. One of the core values of our school board is equity. And policies such as ACA and others that discuss how to be welcoming are important. But it is in the detailed documents that reference for administrators and for school staff what to do and where to get support that we find a lot of value. So we revised our guidelines. We expanded definitions of pronouns, as it was mentioned earlier. We expanded specific questions around athletics, how to access athletics, and that's an important piece so that students are able to participate based on their identified gender and also questions around facilities.
So, Maria, a few months ago, a parent of a transgender student and a non-binary student raised the idea of making all bathrooms in MCPS facilities gender neutral. Is that something the school system is exploring?
Our school board, I remember that board meeting, our school board has asked our facility office to go back and take a look at what it would look like to retrofit all of our facilities. I want to point out that moving forward, as we design and open schools, that is an area that we are looking at how schools are designed, how restrooms and other facilities are designed moving forward. But that is something that the school board asked the facilities office to go back and take a look at.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. As a reminder, if you want to join the conversation, if you're a teacher and you think about being inclusive, you can give us a call at 1-800-433-8850. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned.
This month at WAMU, we're lifting our voices to shine a light on Black changemakers throughout American history. Some you know and some you don't, but they all change the world. Hear the stories of these incredible scientists, activists, artists, and more throughout February on WAMU 88.5 and streaming at WAMU.org.
Welcome back. I'm Jen Gulbeck, sitting in for Kojo. We're talking about gender identity inclusive policies in area schools. We've got a lot of calls and emails right now, and I'd like to start with Tamara in Silver Spring. Tamara, thanks for calling. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me. You know, as a new parent, I have a daughter and a son. And, you know, I came up during a time where... you know, it wasn't, I won't say a cool thing, but a lot of kids that I grew up with didn't necessarily come out at the time. It was much later. So I grew up 80s, 90s. And so, you know, my thought of the transition of the bathrooms to almost gender equal, my concern is around just the comfortability. So as much as maybe a transgender male, transgender female wants to feel comfortable, in that moment when my daughter goes to the bathroom, if she's standing next to somebody who's, you know, trans who considers themselves female and comfortable going to a girl's bathroom, that also impacts the comfortability of my daughter as well. Not to say that I'm not open to the LGBT community, so on and so forth, and working in the DINE space, but I'm curious to really understand, is it really about the comfort? Is it really about equity? And how does that impact people on the other side? So I think the intent and the impact has different consequences or different outcomes on both sides. And I would just like to hear and understand from really anybody on the panel around comfortability, because part of that is...
All right, well, let me get their comments, please, Tamara. Robert, why don't we start with you? I kind of want to go around to everyone, but as someone who's thought about this as sort of a, you know, as a group that's working in schools, to talk about some of the issues around that.
Yeah, my organization, we're not spokespeople for the county. We're an employees and parents group. What I hear from people and what I hear from students is that most of the time you won't even know the person next to you is trans. Most of the time you won't know that there's a transgender person with you. And I think, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. I think we have to get used to the world the way it is. And I find that many of my students and most of my students are really comfortable sharing facilities with trans kids. For those who aren't, I think they should have the right to have their own single user facility. I think no one should be forced to use a facility with someone else.
So this is a really interesting question and one that we had sort of briefly touched on at the break. And Maria, if we kind of bring this back to what we were talking about before the break, that there are moves to either install single, what we call gender neutral bathrooms. These are essentially bathrooms that you go in and there's a toilet and a sink and everything in there, and then you come back out into the hallway. So if you have single person bathrooms like that, as Robert was saying, this eliminates the need to be in a bathroom with anyone that you might not want to be for whatever reason, right? You're just not feeling good and you just want some privacy. You have this space. I'd like you to talk about kind of the questions that come up as a policy shift. Do, say, if you're building a new school, do we make them all gender neutral bathrooms and how that fits into this conversation?
Well, the first thing that I'll say, and my area of expertise is in academics, but I will say that one of the things that I've learned from talking to our community, talking to architects, is that there's actually different ways you can think of these spaces in a way that supports and values the need for privacy, which actually everybody wants at those particular moments, and also allows for not to point out or single out any specific student. And I do think it was important what was just mentioned around not forcing students who are, you know, LGBTQ students or not, to into a certain format, but to having options and opportunity options for students. And I think this comes into play in the facility conversation. I think that we've also heard that many of the students, this is an opportunity to learn about each other. And that in fact, when we look at implementing different facility uses, it is not as a cumbersome or worrisome topic for students as we tend to think.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting way to reframe the conversation, because I am a cisgender woman and I never wanted to change in the locker rooms in middle school or high school. I never once took a shower after gym class in high school and, you know, hid as much as possible, not having any of the issues that come along with being transgender. So thinking about like how to maybe just make everybody more comfortable in those spaces is a really interesting way.
Absolutely.
To think about this. Quincy, did you want to chime in?
Absolutely. I think it's an important question to ask about, you know, everybody's comfort and feeling safe when they're in these different facilities. I do think that it's also really important to not just ask the way that the general public feels about sharing facilities with transgender people, but the way that transgender feel about sharing those facilities in general. I think that to get a little bit more personal, I'm a transgender male, so I was assigned female at birth. And since then, I've come into my gender. I'm male, and I'm on hormones. So that's a personal journey for me. That's not really what's necessarily relevant to the bathroom issue, but the way that it becomes relevant is that I was too afraid and scared to use the men's restroom. I know that that's my gender identity. I know that that's correct and that's who I am, but I didn't want to get corrected or told that I was in the wrong place. It's something that's very scary to a lot of trans individuals, to be singled out and really scrutinized that way. And it became clear to me after a while that I was actually more likely to get scrutiny in a women's restroom than in a men's restroom. And that was a big turning point for me when it was much more comfortable for me to use a men's restroom. And it was never comfortable for me to use a women's restroom. That's, I think, something I would like to get clear, is that transgender people ourselves, we our comfort actually also matters. It's not the way that we impose ourselves onto other people. It's actually just our personal comfort and the way that we like to go about our daily life. I don't personally love to wait until I get home or into a private area to just use the bathroom like a normal person. Using a men's restroom is something that's pretty normal for me. It's not great. It's not bad. It's just the fact of life. But using a women's restroom can be extremely stressful. It's something I haven't had to do in a very long time, but it's for a lot of trans individuals who have to use the bathrooms that correspond to their gender that was assigned at birth, that can be traumatizing, and it can often open them up to a lot of harassment and potential abuse.
Yeah, there are, and of course, I don't have the statistics in front of me, there are a lot of statistics about the violence that trans people face when they're using restrooms of their birth gender as opposed to their gender identity on both sides. Maria, you wanted to follow up on that.
I just wanted to add, Quincy pointed to this, and I think it's just very important to emphasize. When we're talking about schools, one of the things that we have in our guidelines is how do we put together a plan for every single student? And so I appreciate so much your ability to talk about your journey, Quincy, because also when we're talking about schools and when schools are developing a plan with the student, there are levels of development and growth that the student goes to in terms of their preference. And I think that's important. And those plans need to evolve with the student and hopefully also the family of the student on how we accommodate and support students. So it may, when it comes to facilities, it may be that they feel more comfortable starting in a specific facility that is just a restroom onto itself by itself, and later transition into utilizing other restrooms. And I think that's just an important piece of developing plans in schools and talking to students and listening to their needs and what they're going through to be able to comprehensively put a plan of support in place.
I'd like to also read in an email that we got here from Jill that says, the myth that girls will be in danger in bathrooms with transgender students has been debunked by studies of schools that have already adopted transgender bathroom access policies. Unsubstantiated fears about potential violence and concerns about people feeling uncomfortable are arguments that were used in the past to fight against desegregation. These kinds of baseless arguments are no more appropriate now than they were decades ago. So she couldn't be on the phone, but that's an email from Jill. So, Debbie, I want to bring this back to you. Arlington Public Schools has received some pushback against their new policy. What are people objecting to?
Yeah, so I think similar to the pushback that you're hearing in Gloucester County, some families in Arlington have organized to push back against the rules that the school system adopted this summer that allows students to use the facilities that align with their gender identity. They are arguing that the privacy of other students may be compromised, and they've also expressed that they feel that because they hold perhaps more conservative values, that they're feeling marginalized in the school system.
And is anyone making the argument, as some have with same-sex marriage, that recognizing gender identity constitutes a violation of people's religious freedom?
I haven't said it. I haven't heard that in Arlington said that explicitly and to that degree. But I think that you can find arguments that that echo that.
Maria, has MCPS gotten any resistance to its approach to student gender identity, and how have you responded to that?
We've gotten some concerns and questions, and I think part of what we want to do is educate our community, our staff, all of our students. But I have to say that I'm very proud of being a Montgomery County resident. Our PTA, our MCC PTA group, held last May with us, alongside with us, a joint LGBTQ forum last May to bring the community. And it was our first one, and it won't be our last one. And I think they have been really strong partners to help educate us, give us some feedback and support as we tackle this topic. And that's our goal. Our board has been very, very clear. We mentioned the Grimm case that went up to the Supreme Court, and our board was very clear. It sent an amicus brief at that time supporting this. And so we are, as MCPS staff, very clear where our board has sent its message, and that we need to continuously work to educate our staff and our students on how to support all of our students, including our LGBTQ plus community.
Let's take a call now from Kate in Ashburn, Virginia. Kate, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a Loudoun County teacher at an elementary school, and I was wondering what your school systems were doing for elementary school students, because I know a lot of people with gender identity and even sexual preferences, like, people know this very early on, and I was wondering if there was anything being done in the elementary schools to help also keep kids safe and help them feel safe.
Thank you, Kate. So I'm going to have Maria talk about policies, and then I'm going to have Robert talk to the kind of teacher issue. But Maria, why don't you go first?
I would love to talk not just policy. I want to actually highlight last year, one of our elementary schools was named after a civil rights and gay activist, Bayard Rustin, was a school to open last year in Rockville. And I'm very, very proud of that community, the principal and the staff, because they have educated all children in learning about who Bayard Rustin was as a member of our community and our history. And at the same time, they have learned, and they're working through how to create a very welcoming school environment. We use Bayard Rustin as a way to support other schools as they're thinking about how to engage with staff development and support for teachers as students may be coming to them. We've also had families at the elementary level that have transgender students that have come to us, and we create support plans to transition the family to MCPS so that we make all staff aware. And we support the families of the students. We've also had cases where Students may not have support from their families, and I think that's where the wraparound supports and for us in our policies and our regs and our guidelines, it's very clear that we must support the privacy of our students and at the same time support them in a plan, in a comprehensive plan that involves the school to be able to educate and support their well-being while they're in our school. So we're very proud of the work that Bayard-Rustin, and I'm shout out to Bayard-Rustin Elementary, has done, because they really have created a demonstration site for us to use as more staff come in and for people to learn. I think this is definitely debunking myths and concerns is by people really seeing it in action and learning from places that have good practices.
And Robert, as president of Fairfax County Public Schools Pride, I'm sure you address this issue in a bunch of different ways.
Sure. One thing is parents will come to us. I've gotten about 10 contacts this summer from parents going into school. My child is trans or my child is transitioning. What bathroom can they use? How can we help them? How do we tell the teachers? And what I do is I direct them to the central office, the Department of Student Services, who are very welcoming, who are set up to set up programs, plans and support teams. And things like that. Another thing we do within our own organization with teachers is we provide resources for teachers to let their students know that this is a welcoming classroom. Be it, I'm not wearing it today, but being it a show up for trans kid shirt or a little trans pride sticker or a little rainbow sticker or discussing the non-discrimination policy or when instances of bullying come up, not overreacting and having a fit, but instead taking it as a teachable moment to teach people to be more welcoming. I think Loudoun may be different from the other counties in how they treat elementary trans kids. I'm not sure. I heard some things said at the school board meeting this spring that were a little concerning. In Fairfax, I'm not a spokesperson, so you can always talk to the county, but my understanding from parents is kids have access to the facilities that best suit their needs.
So Quincy, as a senior at your high school and someone who's been a vocal advocate for trans rights too, do you hear from younger students who are seeking advice for how to navigate their gender identity in school, and what do you tell them?
I do. I do hear from younger students sometimes, and sometimes it's students that are my age that are certainly capable and as old as I am, but are maybe just confused and starting that journey for themselves. I often will talk to students and tell them that I talk to them about the resources that they have, and I say that, there's always other trans students around you that you can talk to, even if you aren't sure if you're trans or not. These people are great and supportive if you're questioning, even if you decide that you're not trans, or if you decide that you are, or, you come to that realization, I suppose. And then there's also organizations within the school system and within the area that aren't within the school system that have fantastic supportive people. And I think it's really important for trans people and young people especially to hear that there are people out there who are going to support them and try and help them figure things out within their own situation and however their family life may be and their school life may be, and whatever decision about themselves and realization that they end up coming to, that there are people out there who are going to be supportive to them. And it's always, I think, really helpful to hear, which is why I try and say it. I always try and think of what's something I would have wanted to hear during the times that I was struggling the most. So I always try and make sure that I stress that there are people out there who are going to help them and love them no matter what.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm Jen Gulbeck, sitting in for Kojo. We're talking about gender identity inclusive policies in area schools. And Maria Navarro, Chief Academic Officer for Montgomery County. One of the things that the MCPS guidelines for student gender identity include is a meeting between the student, their principal, and then sometimes their parents to discuss the student's experience and what the school could do to help support the student. What kinds of things often come up at that meeting and why is it important?
Well, that's an opportunity to really discuss some of the topics that we discussed today around facilities, use of facilities. It's also important to understand what activities the student wants to participate in and things that may be a perceived or an actual barrier to participate. Sports, athletics is one thing that comes to mind. The social-emotional supports. Are your parents aware? Do they know? Are they supportive? Are they not supportive? Then we are able to tackle those issues, develop some support and plans. I think we've mentioned the importance of having groups that students can turn to and access. And I think that's part of ongoing work in MCPS. I will say our Gender and Sexuality Alliance clubs at every one of our secondary schools is not fully activated yet. At all of our high schools it is, but we're still working through middle schools. And those are just very important safe places for students to talk to each other and have a place to really come together. That's important. So these plans that we develop are really to look at fully the entire student's needs so that we can support them not just academically, but also in their overall wellness and can also inform staff that need to know and what information they need to know so that they are aware and are create welcoming environments in the schools.
Let's take a call now from Jim in Arlington, Virginia. Jim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you, Jen. Kudos to all your guests, particularly Quincy, who's shown such courage, commitment, and I think intentionality in the way he's leading his life. Just a couple things. The way of the future is going to be, general bathrooms, both sexes, no discrimination. I think it's hard right now, much harder for the adults, whatever age you cut off the youth and go to understand this. It's just like homosexuality 35 years ago, where people thought that was a matter of character or choice, and it's not. And it's going to be the same way here. It's great to hear the comments about the elementary kids getting a help out, because that's what it's going to take, education. And then 30 years from now, we'll look back and say, well, why was this ever an issue? I'm an old guy, and I think the adults are going to need much more help than the kids. But the kids, of course, need the kind of people like Quincy and all of your other guests to help them along until it becomes a little less threatening and less dangerous to so-called ordinary people. Thank you.
Jim, thanks for your call. Robert, you were nodding along. I noticed especially when Jim called himself an old guy.
Jim spoke of getting used to new things. You know, I sponsor a Gender and Sexuality Alliance, and we have three things on our shirt. We have a rainbow head, a trans pride head, and then a black and white striped head. And they first told me that it was about including people of different races. It turns out it's the agender flag. But I think when they told me about it, they just didn't think I could handle that. and when you are of my generation, it takes a little bit of time to get used to new things. Respect for everybody, respect for people, listening and understanding are the keys.
Yeah, Quincy, you wanted to chime in.
I just wanted to thank Jim so much for your comment. I think that I agree that, you know, that things in the future are going to get better, and I'm hoping to be a part of that work. And I think that everybody here around this table is doing a fantastic work and is doing just a great job. And I think just the fact that we're all here today is says a lot about the progress that we're making. And I wanted to say just that, you know, there's a lot of self-doubt that can go through a lot of young trans kids' minds, and a lot of worry and a lot of, you know, contemplating about whether, you know, your family or your friends or your peers will accept you. And I just wanted to say, you know, that like a lot of that, it can feel scary. And a lot of that can especially come when you're, you know, dealing with, you know, with older people, whether that be relatives or teachers or mentors or role models. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, there's somewhat of a good reason for that, but there's also a lot of unfoundedness to that, because I think a lot of my greatest supporters and allies have been, you know, people who are, you know, growing up in times where this really wasn't even talked about. And I think it's been so important for me to really just open myself up to, you know, being loved and supported, and to open other people up to loving and supporting me. I think my presence in a lot of, in some people's lives has been able to open their minds, and I think that my ability to do that has hopefully made the situation better for some people who aren't maybe quite as able to take that first step.
Let's take a call now from Sage in Alexandria. Sage, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and say I am a trans person, and my life would have been irrevocably changed for the better had there been trans-inclusive policies when I was in school. And so I just wanted to say thank you for the work that you're doing, and thank you for supporting trans youth and for saying that, you know, you have a space in this world and you have a space in our school, because I did not attend a school that had that option and had the option of me being able to be out, me being able to talk about my experience or be accepted for who I was, and the ability for young folks to be able to have folks around them, even if they don't 100% understand a person's gender identity, but to say, like, I will accept you for who you are and I will refer to you how you desire to be referred to, is amazing and incredible. And I just am really grateful and really thankful for that conversation and how it's being had nowadays. And so thanks.
Thank you so much, Sage. Everyone in the studio is nodding along with you, so we really appreciate your call as well. And Maria, maybe you can sort of chime in here and just talk about how that kind of comment has guided the policies that have been adopted in MCPS.
Well, you know, that the caller, I was reflecting on the massive work that we have. I mean, for example, in Montgomery County, we have 264,000+ students.
Wow.
And it's a large county. And we, on average, hire about anywhere between 900 to 1,000 new teachers. So this question around educating and for people to understand, and they don't have to have perfect vocabulary, know it well, but this concept of, I respect you as an individual, I value you, I'm listening, I'm learning on your preferred pronoun, your needs, who you are, is the way we've been trying to provide professional development to our staff. And for them to understand that they don't have to be experts. They just have to have some reflection on their maybe unconscious biases that they have, what they learned, what they grew up, what they were exposed to, and what they were not, in order to support their students. And their job, our job, is to support and educate every single student that walks through the door. And so I think that's part. You don't have to be an expert. We will be developing. I will be continuously developing my own knowledge in this topic, but so will everybody else. And I think the most important thing is welcome, respect, and support. And we ask our staff constantly to seek out places where they can find specific supports and guidance if they have questions. That begins at for our schools at the leadership level with the principals, but also in central office. And I think our central office in multiple departments has undergone deeper training to support the schools when they have questions. And questions are a normal part of the learning experience. And we welcome them, and we want to be able to support our staff as they are learning as well.
Let's take one more call now from Ashton in Washington, D.C. You're on the air. Go ahead, Ashton.
Hi. So I'm a student at DCI, which is a middle and high school in D.C., and about a year and a half ago, we opened up 3 multi-stall gender-neutral bathrooms, which have had little to no problems over the year and a half, as I said. And I just wanted to bring that up because I think that sometimes we assume that multi-stall gender-neutral bathrooms just won't work in a high school for a lot of reasons, but it's something that a school community can really adjust to. And I think it's helped my school specifically be more comfortable for trans and gender non-conforming students. So, yeah.
Thanks, Ashton. We appreciate the call. So I want to talk a little bit about some additional policy issues. And Debbie, one of those is that another really critical aspect of students' experiences in school is whether or not their identities can be reflected on official school documents, their transcripts, other forms. For the first time this year, DC and Alexandria schools will offer a gender non-binary checkbox on official forms. Talk about why that matters.
Yeah, so I think there are two really critical points in regard to this. I think the first is, you know, when you see that you have non-binary in a form, it sort of signals to the person filling out that form that their experience is acknowledged and accepted and welcome. And number two, from a practical perspective, I think having that information on school documents signals to schools what resources they need to best serve these students. So, you know, if a student checks that they're non-binary, then a school has a sense of how many of those students are on their campus, and they can plan accordingly for things like gender-neutral restrooms, for example.
You're also watching to see what comes next in the Gavin Grimm case. Are there other stories or questions about student gender identity in schools that you think could be significant in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in our discussion today, we talked a lot about, you know, school systems in the DC region that are sort of really pushing the envelope on this and being more progressive and more welcoming. And I think it's, you know, great for the students in this region. But we also have to note that that experience isn't universal, and it's actually far from universal. And there are students across Virginia and elsewhere in the country whose experiences are not the same. And so I think, you know, educators should really interrogate the question of whether or not it's fair that students, depending on where they live, are getting different educational experiences.
We got a message from Mark who says, great show. Can you share this resource for anyone who would like to support? This is PFLAG DC. So that's the letter P, the word flag, DC.org. This organization covers the entire DMV region. Robert, you're nodding. And of course, can you talk about PFLAG for people who aren't familiar?
We work a lot with PFLAG. I think my own coming out experience 30 years ago was with PFLAG. But there are several PFLAG support groups in Fairfax County, one in Alexandria, two in Fairfax. There's a small children's group. There's the Transgender Education Association. And one thing that one of our board members is doing is starting a group for the parents of and for children of color who may not be able to access the other groups. So PFLAG is a terrific resource, both for schools and for families.
And a resource that I often point parents to when they have a kid who comes out and they're like, I think I'm supportive, but I don't know what to do. It's a great place to go and get some advice there. So Quincy, I want to end with you. We've only got about 30 seconds left, but is there more policy that you'd like to see Arlington schools adopt? Do you see like a next step to pursue moving into the school year?
I don't know. I think that the next step is really going to depend on how the school year goes. And I think the biggest thing I can see us doing for the future is to use this new policy and to use our transgender advocates in the school systems to change hearts and minds out in the community. And I really wanted to thank everyone who called in. And I think you guys all did it. Everybody here and everyone who called did a fantastic job.
Thanks to everyone. I'd like to specifically thank all of our guests. Debbie Truong reports on education for Virginia and the Washington Post. Maria Navarro is the chief academic officer for Montgomery County Public Schools. Quincy Dubois is a rising senior in Arlington Public Schools. It was especially great to have you here, Quincy. And Robert Rigby Jr. is a teacher and the president of Fairfax County Public Schools Pride. Thanks to all of you for joining us and to everyone who called in. And that's today's show. It was produced by Margaret Barthel. Coming up tomorrow, we'll hear about how local groups are organizing to support Washingtonians in immigration court and ICE check-ins. Plus, Kojo sits down with author Tope Fularin to talk about his debut novel, A Particular Kind of Black Man. That all starts tomorrow at noon. I hope you have a wonderful afternoon. I'm Jen Gulbeck, sitting in for Kojo Nnamdi.
The Kojo Nnamdi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Margaret Barthel, Sydney Grannon, and Maura Curry. Our managing producer is Angelisa Schroepsdorf. Our senior producer is Monica Cashley. Our engineer is Ben Privett, and our intern is Kayla Hewitt. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Nnamdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.